can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Well now, what an honour, being graced by intelligence and beauty and character. We're chatting too. Sitting opposite me is the great Beverly Pinder. Mortimer, I should say, but your stage name was Beverly Pinder. So
correct.
We'll just introduce you as Beverly Pinder, not wishing to move Mr. Mortimer out of the way for this, but... And Beverly Pinder, in case you didn't know, Ivan.
Go Ivan, ahead.
And Dick.
Thank you.
Was crowned Miss Universe in...
Australia. Miss Universe Australia in
Thank
1978.
You. I'm glad you said that, because the people who gave you that award, the judges, are infamous people in their own right. I'll get on to that in a minute. In 1978. Mm-hmm. And you come from... Well, Sri Lanka, which was, when you were born, Ceylon.
Correct.
And
quite interesting, actually, Sam, because, you know, you talked earlier about racism. A coloured girl winning the Miss Australia title. So where the hell is all this racism?
Don't worry, we're going to get on to that about did you experience racism in those days when you were a contestant? We'll get on to all that, but we just give it just a thumbnail sketch of who you are, because you're not just a pretty face, as they say. You are an active political, in the political landscape in Victoria, or you were. Have a PR company called, you're a consultant, and you're with Roland Pinder Communication, what is that word I've written down there?
Consultant.
Consultants. How am I going, Beverly?
I think we should swap places. No, you can't be serious.
You got him.
Well, you've done. Intimidated me. I can't even read my own writing. I'm all a Twitter.
He's nervous.
And you're a green belt in karate.
Yeah.
Now, I looked up what a green belt is. Do you know there's a whole lot of different colours in karate? A green belt means that you are a representation of growth. That's what green belt means. That it's a sign that you're growing in whatever you're growing in, stature and
mental
confidence.
Acumen.
Mental acumen. So there we are. So and you had to do, it says here, you had to do 32 classes in 4 months to get a green belt in karate. Did you do that?
Well, before we get on to that.
Yes.
I just want to thank you
because
I'm going to call you Scoop Newman from now on.
Scoop?
Yes, Scoop. Because on 27 December 2023, you interviewed my former boyfriend, Richard Norton.
Oh,
okay,
we
now,
did.
Hang about. But for 46 years, I had an inkling when he said he was going to the States with Linda Ronstadt, but I didn't actually know that he lived with her for 2 years.
Oh. Wow.
Oops. So he was your boyfriend
and
he scarpered away over there and he two-timed you.
Well, no, I don't think he two-timed me. I said, you know, I had this saying, you know, if you love someone, something, you let them free.
Yes.
And that was very big for us.
Yep.
And he could see opportunity with Linda, but Linda was with George Brown, governor.
Yes.
So I felt quite safe.
Yes.
But of course, I heard last night when I was listening to Richard's podcast.
I see.
That he spent 2 years
with
her.
I wish I'd known that he went out with you when I was interviewing him. Yeah, you could have got both sides of the story.
I know.
Well,
but I've met Linda. I'd met Linda at Hamer Hall
when she first
came out to do that gig.
Really? And did
and
you
did
mention
taught her how to
and
do
did
some
she
jive.
Know did she know the history of you and
you shared her?
She was aware.
Yes.
She was aware. She was cute, but very bad skin.
Oh, that's fantastic. Very bad skin. Well,
but Judy Greene is one of my best friends as well. So, you know, it all goes around, doesn't it?
Oh, well, there
but
you
sorry,
go.
Sam, I just thought I'd, you know, no, it's in my book. Which is in my book.
So,
what this page? Is
Richard went on to do security work, Pride Without Prejudice.
Yes.
Because Australia really is not a racist nation.
No, it isn't, is it?
No. Okay. I'm glad you said that because I get accused of being a racist for just having no more of a, just a logical opinion about things. I'd be happy to speak about that.
You're
going to
get the idiots. You're going to get the idiots. Of course you
are. Well, it's just a lazy way of showing you've got a weak mind calling someone a racist, unless they actually are racist.
No, don't.
But racism is about hate. I hate no one about who would we hate that? Who would we hate in this country unless you personally hate someone, but you don't hate a race of people? What is that?
Go back to the 60s when we migrated. My family migrated. I was 13.
Yep. Where from?
From Ceylon, Sri Lanka.
Yeah, sure. Whereabouts in?
Colombo. Everyone's born there.
Yep.
And Australia had a white Australia policy.
Yeah, yep.
Okay, good. I remember Mum from the age of 3. To 13, tracing this genealogy. So, you know, because of my Dutch, English, Irish background.
Yep.
Born in Ceylon for 2 generations birth, but then from there earlier than that, it was all mixed. So we had sufficient white blood in us to be able to migrate in 68. But I didn't think and say, oh, God, Australia, bloody racist. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm going to get on with it. I'm going to make it here.
And
bloody earth.
I bet people loved you, didn't they?
Yeah. Exactly.
And that is the point of all the cottage industry activists that push this narrative that it's them and us. And I get criticised a lot for saying,
They project, Sam. They're deliberately trying to create division when Australian society is actually getting along very well. But then they create this division by constantly pushing it, and it's a projection of their own inner division.
Okay, now, so Beverly. It seemed to be a vote. Is that you?
That's me and Richard.
Oh, I see.
I thought I'd bring it just to titillate you.
Oh, you have no pun intended. You have titillated us. I'm going to. You've got a cavalcade of stars. You're going to be one of the. You're going to be one of the stars up there. So it seemed to be a. Not a vocation, but it seemed to be a trait. You won your first or entered your first beauty contest, if you like, in 1970.
I actually entered a charity competition.
14 and 16 years of age, you have to be.
That's what I entered, a charity.
You would have looked sharp when you were 14 and 16.
Look
sharp now, Beverly, but you would have looked very sharp when you were 14 or 16. I'm not sure if we're allowed to say that in this day and age, but I'm saying it.
I want it.
Yeah.
But you know what, Sam? I actually entered a charity competition. I saw Harold Blair on TV, new to Australia, saying he wanted to raise money for Aboriginal kids to have a school holiday.
Yep.
I said, that's what I want to do. I'm going to raise my money. Mm-hmm. And I did, you know, washed cars, did barbecues, bought wagon wheels for 30 cents, sold them
certainly
for 50 cents
I remember
at 3
them,
o'clock in the afternoon. But I fronted up at Dallas Brooks Hall with my money. And the lady on the desk said, what's your name? I said, oh, Beverly De Silva, Mrs. Snedden. She said, oh, know me? I said, yes. And she said, oh, well, your name's not here. I said, I brought my money, Mrs. Snedden. She said, oh, are you in the charity section? Oh, you got to be in the beauty section. Put my name down
for
the beauty section.
Yeah.
And, of course, I knew Lady Joy because I knew of her because Sir Billy was the immigration minister at the time when we migrated. And his principal thing was integration. Come out to Australia and integrate.
Yep.
Not assimilation. Integration,
yep.
And that's what I wanted to do, and you know, set out to do.
And so
how does someone from Sri Lanka integrate into society?
Well, for a start, you don't stick with your own
food.
Food, well, food is great. Food is fantastic.
I know, it's absolutely
food is fantastic.
Beautiful.
No, you assimilate. You don't segregate.
You don't
segregate.
You
assimilate.
You get together.
Absolutely.
Your Aussie buddies, your Jewish friends, your Czechoslovakian friends, all of those, you know. Mm. And that's what I did at Elwood High, which was a fantastic school.
So they shoved you off to the beauty section with the wagon wheels, and you won the beauty section for 14 to 16 year olds on your merits. They didn't give it to you because you'd Australia sold a whole lot of wagon wheels, you were a very pleasant-looking, aesthetically attractive
with
lass.
A little bit of an accent.
Yeah.
A bit of exoticism.
So you won many, I'm saying you won many titles, many titles that were came up mm-hmm. at various stages, but the one in 1978 was when you won Australian representative of Miss Universe, and the judges, I like the judges, they were, you were 23 at the time, I presume?
Yes.
They were Ita Buttrose, Sir Robert Helpman, Bobby, Kim Benithan and John Waters. Now, they must have... did you have to, as in most beauty pageants, and you do the swimsuits and all that, and then they ask you questions, don't they? Or did you have to answer any questions or
course.
Give you... And did you know the questions you were going to be asked? And you... I've watched some of the women or the girls or the females, if you like, and maybe they're trans people these days. They get so contrived with their answers. They don't do it off the top of their head. They think, if I'm asked this, I'll say what I'm expected to say about the climate or whatever. How did you go with all that?
Natural. Just as it came.
What were you asked? You remember?
I can't remember what I was asked, Sam, but my raison d'etre for being there was acceptance. I wanted to be accepted as an Australian, so I'd do anything that... Where I came into contact with a wide group of people and a wide group of experiences from that. So, you know, Lions Club, Rotary Club, all of that. I was doing all of this at 13, 14, 15, 16. But in the Miss Universe Australian section, the Victoria, there were 500 girls throughout Australia, 35 Victorian finalists. And Lana Wells, who was Darren Hinch's former wife, beautiful woman. Melbourne editor.
Darren Hinge's former. I thought I knew most of his
wives.
I knew, I didn't know he was married to Lana Wells, yep.
Yeah.
New Zealander.
Lana was very fond of me. I could tell. At the Victorian final, I could tell that she was just quite fond of me, yeah. I guess she saw something in me that was invigorating and vibrant and new and different for Australia.
And what did she have to do with the...
She was a judge. In the Victorian, finals,
I
went to Perth.
Yep.
Okay, and John Waters and Ita. Ita's still one of my role models, of course. Amazing woman.
And Sir Bobby.
amazing because I love dance as I love karate. I love dance as well. And the questions were I can't tell you exactly what the questions were, but they were very much. I was working at the immigration department at the time. So that was another one.
Here in Melbourne?
Yeah, yep. Something else that I really wanted to do because I wanted to find out a bit more about this White Australia policy.
Yep.
I wanted to see how people were chosen and given citizenship and residence and all that sort of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I was quite up with migration. I was quite, you know, well informed about adopting kids from Bangladesh and places like that. So I think they kind of structured the questions about all of that to show that Australia was emerging as a multicultured nation. And that won me, I think that won for me, really.
Yeah. So you were a naturalised Australian? When?
Within 12 months of being here.
Really?
Yeah, because we were British subjects.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So, and... Did your parents come with you?
13, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, I'm just wasn't sure. Like, I was just not sure of the family history. So did your mother take... You went all over Australia entering these pageants or...
No.
Well, you said you had to go to Perth.
Yes, for the final. For the final, yes. Sorry, Sam.
No, that's all right. Did your parent and mother accompany you?
No,
you just...
No, I just did it on my
own. Just did it on your own?
Did your parents approve?
I said something earlier which you guys didn't pick up on. My name was Beverly De Silva.
I did pick up on that.
Yeah.
But you were talking. I didn't want to interrupt
you. Okay, so when I was 15, a stringer photographer from the Mornington Peninsula for the Sun News Pictorial.
Right.
Said to me, I think you better change your name because I said, well, I'm getting all these phone calls at 5 a.m. in the morning from weird men. And I had to I used to jump out of bed and get the phone and get this heavy breathing. Dad didn't like it, yeah? So Harry Sotokau said, change your name. I said, I can't change my name. I'm 15 years old. You know, what am I going to call myself? So by the time I turned 16, I said to Dad, can I take Mum's maiden name? And he said, no. He said, you look like my grandmother. You use Pinder.
That was
her name. She was from Whitby, Captain Cook territory in England. And he said, no, you look like her and I want you to use Pinder. And it stuck.
I did understand when you said that, but I was going to come back to that if I'd remembered. Memory's not too good. And you were naturalised De Silva.
De Silva.
So then you had to just get that changed by deed poll.
No, I didn't.
No,
you. I worked at immigration. Remember?
Oh, you do it yourself. That's
what
gold.
What do you want, Beverly? Stamp, also known as De Silva.
You shall now be known as
Stamp.
So
that easy.
It was then, wow. In 1777.
So in the days of doing it, was there in the among the contestants and the other entrants, was there bitchiness or cattishness, or was there
huge.
Race? Was there?
Huge.
And how did you deal with that, because you remained aloof, or did you give back what you got?
No. I always maintain you've just got to set your path. You've got a trajectory. Stick with that. So in Perth, the final four were three blondes and me. So what do you think my chances were, really? I mean, I looked down at John Waters and I said, thank you, meaning thank you for making me one of four, you know. Yep. And it became third runner-up, second runner-up, and then there's Sue Wood and I. Sue dropped her bracelet. And on camera, I picked it up and I put it into a palm of her hand. I said, congratulations, you've won. And she said, thank you. And the next thing I know, the announcer, can't think of his name right now, famous announcer at the time, was announcing my name as the winner, not hers as first runner-up.
Nice.
It was lovely. It was really nice. But the racism bit, I could tell that there were a couple of, you know, very fair-skinned blonde girls from Queensland who didn't think I had a hope in hell, but it didn't matter to me, Sam, because I wanted, that was enough for me. If I didn't go anywhere else, that was okay, because I was always going to create my own future, my own path, you know?
So I missed, why did you give the bracelet to you?
Well, she dropped it.
Yeah.
I thought you were conceding that you thought she'd won.
No, she dropped it. I picked it up. I should not have done that on camera, but I thought it's going to go if you don't pick it up, you know. I picked it up and it's on film as well, and I popped it into a palm of a hand and I said, congratulations, Sue, you've won.
See, today
that's a very good. So
it would have come across very nice.
Yeah, well, that's me though, Ivan.
Mm. Nice. See, today they would have said natural.
No, it's good. Ivan, he is. So did you experience the little racism in that?
No, not at all. Aita was amazing. She was looked out for me. But no, I didn't experience any racism whatsoever.
Not from the contestants.
But in Mexico, which is where this year's contestants are going.
Yep.
Now, I'm here to tell you, Mexico is one hell of a racist nation.
It is.
It's only from the joys of travelling that you realise we are not racist
here.
We're not.
The other countries are just...
They are.
Hands down. Yeah,
they actually said, what are you doing here? You're not Miss Australia. Where's your blue eyes and blonde hair?
Yeah, of course.
So I thought, no, don't worry. My roommate was Margaret Gardner. She was 17. I said, Margaret, you're a winner. Stick with me, because you had to be in places at a particular time. You had to have your shoes polished. This is the 70s, okay?
Yeah.
You had to have your makeup done. I said, stick with me and I'll guide you. So I became a PR consultant then.
And well, we'll get on to your, because you're, as I said, not just a pretty face. So in those days there was no such thing as... enhancements and Botox and shaping and filler and trans people. Get on to why.
I think Sue might have had a little bit of enhancement. the girl who came second.
Oh, yeah, I see. Yes. What did enhancements entail?
They were sitting beautifully.
Okay. So they're just padding.
No.
Or no. So no, breast in.
Oh, it was actually the very first stages of
the breast implants.
Saline or whatever.
Yeah, saline. Yeah. Yep.
Because can I tell you a little story? So one day I've booked Monique Van Damme to come for a modelling job.
Yep.
And the agent rings me and says, oh, Monique's had a really bad skiing accident. I said, oh, really?
When was this?
This is in the 70s.
70s, yep.
After I got into PR. And I said, oh, my God, you know, I hope she's okay. Mm. I said, what has happened? Well, she fell over skiing. This boob, one boob, the liquid, the fluid, whatever, seeped into the other boob and it became quite huge. Mm. So I was scared. I wouldn't do a thing to myself. God's given me what I am and who I am. That's it.
Yeah, so
where it is, the colour of the skin, the eyes, everything.
Botox wasn't heard of and
natural.
Filler and...
Not filler, but Botox, not the saline stuff, you know, was happening then.
So you just said then... In 1970, you started PR in 1970?
79.
Oh, I thought you said 70. 1979, you bought Roland?
No.
You didn't.
I worked for Alan Chip, Don Chip's brother, at Professional Public Relations.
Yeah.
I was raising, Dame Phyllis Frost called me in and said, Beverly, can you help me raise money to build a new wing at Maroondah Hospital? And sitting across the table was Alan Chip. Professional public relations, and within minutes he offered me a job. And I said, oh, God, I can't do PR. So I rang a friend and I said, what's PR? He said, what you've been doing for yourself since you were 15. So I think I can do that. But the key, as you know, Sam, is knowing the journos, knowing the photographers, being honest and being trustworthy.
Yeah.
You know, that's the basic tenet, really.
Networking.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, Beverly, I said, it says here that you... Bought Roland and Co.
5.5 years later.
Later.
Four years later, I said to Alan, I'd love to be a part of this business. But I said, I know you.
Roland is a consultancy agency, is he? Not the food company.
No, not the food company, yeah. No. And I came up with a great proposition. I said, set me up in the little house in West Melbourne next door, and you and I can be partners. And I'll work for conflicting clients, but build that Chinese wall, you know, make sure we don't. Yep. And months later, the comment came back that there was no confidence in women being in management. So I resigned within a week.
From Roland and
No, from Professional Public Relations.
I see.
Didn't know what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
My gorgeous husband, Peter Cox, who passed away in February, unfortunately, was a press photographer. He said, no, I'm going to get you an office. Got me a flat, in a serviced apartments. And I sat there with a telephone. And on day one, I had three phone calls from photographers saying, what the hell are you doing? Where are you? Mm-hmm. And then Nick Datner rang and said, you can't just leave me like this. You're working on my launch. I said, no, Nick, you belong to Professional Public Relations. You've got to work through with Alan and team. Yep. And Nick said, no, bloody hell, no way. I never liked Alan. I'm not, you know. I said, well, sorry, I can't. Anyway, came back, rang back within minutes. I asked Alan to go get whatever. And I said, I was a bit unsure, but I thought, well, this is a launch. I mean, I had Kerri-Ann Kennelly coming down from Sydney and all sorts of things happening. So I did his launch, and that was the start of my PR.
That was the start of it. Au naturel.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Mr. Cox.
Mr. Cox, he was...
Who's Mr. Mortimer?
Mr. Mortimer's third husband.
I see, so
I'm pretty good.
Well, we've had almost a cricket team between us. So you were married once in... first marriage was in here, in Australia? Or well, have
yeah,
to be,
course,
wouldn't it?
Yes,
you wouldn't have been
course,
married
yeah.
14.
Peter
less.
Well, Peter Cox, get this. Moonee Valley Racecourse, I'm some sort of an ambassador. And it's Colin Hayes and Damien Oliver and me and the horse. Can't think of the name of the horse. And photographers.
Yep.
And so they take pictures of me the four of us. And this young upstart comes up and says, oh, Beverly, can you just step out of the picture?
A photographer.
A photographer.
Wanted the horse.
I said, said, yes, of course. And I said, what's your name? Peter Cox, The Age. I said, oh, okay. Stepped out of the picture. I thought, I'm going to get him.
Yeah.
So I married him.
And he's paid for it ever since.
And it was that successful.
And it was a good marriage. It was a great marriage. Successful. A good man.
And it was a good decision you made.
Yes, it was.
That's it. How long were you married?
8.5 years.
Fantastic. He was a good man. And he just passed?
He passed in February. He was the owner of Stars of Carrum, the horse.
Yes.
The racehorse. And he was very sad. Stars of Carrum died 2 weeks prior to his death.
Wow.
And he was taking the ashes to Moonee Valley to spread them.
Mm-hmm.
And on his way back, he stopped the lights and he stopped as well.
It must have, yes, must have been. Attack. So then you married someone else?
No, not then. I married 8.5 after I first married. I married, yes, someone I'd rather not mention, Paul Sadler.
Paul Sadler?
Mm. Who's Paul? Swim schools?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
How did that go? That just...
21 months I was married.
Oh, of course.
You get less for stealing an Uber.
Yes.
No, the thing with me, less. Sam, is I know when I have to go.
Mm.
Yeah?
In 21 months
I
was...
I won't.
That's right. I lived a similar... had a similar philosophy in that I was married 3 times and I... thought if it's over, it's over, and why you ruin someone else's life as well as yours? So let's call it quits, and they can find some other form of happiness.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I would never stay on for the sake of staying on.
Yeah.
But probably that's an easy way out. Maybe it's not.
And then I was on my own for 12 years.
Mm-hmm. And then?
And vowed to retire.
Mm-hmm. And then Mr. Russell came along.
He'd known me since I was 5 years of age.
Russell Mortimer.
In Ceylon.
Oh, wow. Really?
In Ceylonese. I'd never ever been out with a Sri Lankan before.
Is he Ceylonese?
Yes, he's Ceylonese. I see. Yeah. And he went to school with my brothers. And
from Colombo as well?
Yeah.
He
was married. And I said no.
Why did you
then
say
Then he hired me to do his PR.
Ah, he used the business approach. That's a familiar trick, that
he
one.
He had method in his madness.
Absolutely.
And you have some offspring from him?
No.
No, you don't.
Twin stepsons.
Beautiful. So Mr. Mortimer has...
That was a gift from God because one's got autism.
I see, yeah.
And I do as much as I can for... I still call him the boy because they're 30 years old. Hmm. And Jake was in the throes of coming out and had great difficulty. You know, and there's something about me that is always for the other person and help.
I understand that. You're a great philanthropist and a great charity worker, and you became a political person. You were on the ticket with Robert Doyle.
Whom I love.
Yes. He fell from grace, didn't he?
Well, he did, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. But you know what, this
didn't
whole
thing... Didn't make any advances on you, did he,
chance? No. And in fact, that was a question the police asked me.
Oh, did they?
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I said, I'm going to give you a response, I said, but get it right.
Yep.
Just get it right, because if you don't, then I'll sue.
Yeah.
He was a good and honourable man to you?
Yes, very much so, and he's still my mate.
So when you said on the ticket, you're talking about Melbourne City Council,
yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
And how did you find your experience being on the Melbourne City? I'm in the jurisdiction, I live in the city of Melbourne, and would there be some things they could address? How did you find the experience?
Well, working with Robert was great.
Yeah,
it was fantastic.
It?
Brilliant. Yep. Absolutely sensational. And Susan Riley, who was his deputy at the time, she's still a very good friend of mine. And Robert was brilliant in that his decades of political you know, involvement and business now. He said, marketing Melbourne, that's your portfolio.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did really well with Melbourne being regarded as the most livable city in the world for 7 years in our time at council, Robert's time as well, you know, so, and Robert helped me there.
But you, your main focus, I think, I'm not not telling you, I'm asking you, your focus was on a thing called Street Count, where you tried to get people off the streets and were very, very conscious about helping people who were less fortunate and didn't have a place to live. And if ever I was going to be the four things I would ever concentrate on if I was in your position or was the mayor, or the would be litter, graffiti, the homeless, and law and order.
Absolutely. And I'd do the same. Do you want to run?
Yeah. You'd be a good ticket.
Go for it.
You'd be a good ticket.
Yeah, I'd be your deputy any day.
And to have the homeless sleeping in doorways of city
terrible,
streets and properties is terrible. But if you're going to have a no-strike policy or a one-strike policy and move them on, you have to have somewhere to move those unfortunate people to, and refuges with under the guidance of the late Les Twentyman, the man from the Salvation Army,
Brendan
Nottle, and the late Bob Maguire. When I was thinking of doing it, I was going to have a triumphant, if you like.
A triumvirate.
Thank you very much. You're coming from Sri Lanka, you're correcting me on my English, and that's, I love that. A triumvirate of those three people to try and find places to take people who are less fortunate but don't have them living in the city and giving us a bad name internationally.
Well, that was my portfolio second term.
Yep.
Okay, so when the...
What years were this?
I was first on council 2012 to 2016.
Yep.
Then I ran with Robert and I did not get in because it's a very funny, really strange way of things, how things unfold in terms of where you're positioned and all that. And then when all that kerfuffle happened at Town Hall, I was given the option of coming back. I was next cab off the rank. So I had to think about it. I rang Aaron and I said, Aaron, who was acting Lord Mayor at the time and a great buddy of mine, I said, what do you think? I mean, I can come back. If you think that it would be good for me to come back, I would. If you think that, you know, that I've done my time and whatever, that's okay by me too. And he said, I'd love to have you back. So I said to the Victorian Electoral Commission, I would go back, and got the portfolio that the previous incumbent had, which was People's City. And the first thing I found out there, Sam, you'd be amazed, my first meeting was approaching for the Homelessness Advisory Committee. And I said, where is the police? Where's Vic Pol on this committee? Oh, no, they said, we can't have Vic Pol because Justice Connect will get upset and Lisa Wilkinson will get upset.
Yeah.
And
I said, extraordinary, isn't it?
I said, it's ridiculous. Went to the meeting, 20 people around the table. I eyeballed my five lived experience members and I said, look, in my view, there's a great absence here and it's Vic Pol. Lisa Wilkinson was the first to put her hand up and said, Councillor, you're absolutely right. Vic Pol needs to be represented on this committee. And we started from there.
Good. So she was sort of against it, or was ambivalent to start with.
And then misunderstood.
Yes, and then when you pointed out that this is nonsensical, not to have the law and order involved in running the country or the city.
City, absolutely. And what we did there with Craig Peel, Superintendent Craig Peel, was I said, you've got to get your rookies down on their haunches, talking to the people. You know, don't stand up and look down.
Communicate with the rank and file.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no.
You know, worked well.
So I suppose the caravan of beauty pageants has taken a bit of a belting with all the enlightened people saying it's, you know, it's not necessarily for people who look great, the aesthetic appeal of it. It's the other things involved now, and it's been dumbed down to the fact that it's just become a farce, really, because there's so many different things that have to be in this name of diversity, inclusion and equity have to be taken into account that you think, oh, you might win a title, and you think, On what title did you actually win? What is that about? And then we have the trans entrance into ladies' beauty pageants. We have gone, you must be bemused cringe. By where this is all headed.
I am. Look, I mean, I think particularly in sport when you've got that, that's an unfair, unfair thing, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. In this, but Sam, the thing that's happening is on May 25 or 28, Argentina is going to select their entrant.
And is it trans?
Potentially. She's well, she's 60 years old.
Yep.
Oh, I don't know that she's a trans.
No, I'm sorry.
I don't
she's
know that
not.
She's a trans.
No, she's
no.
not. Someone she's, else is that's
She
an
could
entrant.
Very likely win. Yep. Now, I don't agree to that. Yeah, I don't. I think 60 is far too. I mean, I'm 70 next year.
Yes. But you're not ageist. But the
I'm
the,
not
but
ageist.
The, no, but you're not. But the point of
but
it
there's
is.
There's a time and place.
Exactly. The point of it is. I mean,
you've got to give opportunity to our young men and women.
Yep.
Okay. Men are important. Our men are very important, and we've always got to try and bring them, take them along with us, rather than decimating them or creating this environment where they're thinking, "Oh my God, you know, can I touch you? Can I, you know, give you a peck on the cheek?" You know.
No. Well, there was talk during the week. You probably saw it in the media as well about men congregating in groups. They don't want men congregating in groups.
What?
Yeah, because domestic violence and everything that goes nonsense. Along with what that.
Well, that's interesting because I've been away in Sri Lanka launching my book all week. I've just got back.
Beautiful. Have you?
Yeah, I just got back yesterday. But
this is just out, this book.
This book was out in October.
Oh, well.
And I brought my a hard copy for you.
Yes, thank you.
But yes, so Pride Without Prejudice. But what I was going to say was,
yes, you.
I am the patron of the men's shed, Melbourne Men's Shed.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Now, that was something, Glenda Banks, remember Glenda Banks?
Yeah,
I've amazing spoken at the Glenda.
And that's about congregating men, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, Glenda Banks called me in 2012 and said, "Beverly, come, I want to talk to you before the election." I said, "Yes, Glenda." Glenda
Does she talk like
Glenda
that?
Was revered. Oh, yes, she just talks at you. She used to. She's passed now. And she said, "Beverly, I want a men's shed in Melbourne for our men in from East Melbourne, and you know." Yep. And I said, "Glenda, I love the idea so much. I will do it whether I get in or not." Okay, wow. So I gave her my commitment, and she passed not long after.
Did she?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Beverly, I noticed that you've got the book there and you've got some earmarked pages. Is that not for us, are they?
No, I just thought
they might be pearls of wisdom that you were going to mention to us that, did you know this, Sam, or I want you to take notice of this because you need some help and you need to be enlightened.
No, I mean, there's a section on Gen Y and how I employed a lot of people in my time, 37 years in business. It was quite a...
Okay.
Quite a celebrated and way to pass
I
your time.
I did mention before we started this chat that I think I mentioned to Tony, who was here, when we were saying that you were waiting for us to start to chat, you said your main edict, or one of your main edicts, was to preserve the your reputation at any cost.
And I still stand by that.
Yes.
I'm not an active public relations professional anymore because I give my time two pro bono initiatives, Country Women's Order of Australia Association Committee member, Turning Hope into Action, which I started with Lisa Wilkinson, who had experienced living in refuges herself. So I that's what I do mainly, but I'll do the odd writing for anyone who wants it, you know, and I'm a bit funny. I don't want to charge for anything.
Have you spoken to Lisa?
I've done my time.
Yeah, how's Lisa going after the great fracas and the saga of what was going on politically? Is that same Lisa Wilkinson we're talking about?
No.
We're not.
This is Lisa Peterson.
Oh, God.
No,
God.
Not that Lisa.
Oh, sorry.
But I knew Lisa Wilkinson when she was editor of Dolly. 17, I think she was, you know?
God, what's she like then?
She's changed.
Yeah, she's just changed.
Just a bit.
Well,
so you probably couldn't get someone, Sam, more integrated in Australian society that has come from overseas, from Sri Lanka, all country women's.
Absolutely.
And all that. Incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Raising money. And
as they said, the main character in the Enigma Code said, sometimes it's the very people that no one imagines anything of. Do things that no one can imagine. You are one of those people. You are a star and an achiever, and a delight to have as a new Australian that came from Ceylon?
Well, I say Sri Lanka. I was Australian before my parents even came to Australia, yeah, because from the age of two,
yeah,
there was talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember at age two, yep, that we were going to Australia. So
not for a cricket match, was it?
No, no. But I also heard this stuff about the White Australia policy. So I had already kind of, you know, I started my elocution classes and all that sort of thing when I was in primary school.
Yes.
I've just come from Colombo, as I said, to launch mm-hmm. my book, and went to my old school and offered to support mm-hmm. three students
mm-hmm.
for 6 years of their education.
Sure.
Mm. Yeah.
It seems to have been
starting July.
It very seems nice.
Putting back.
The only reason I know about you, Norman. So Ceylon became Sri Lanka in 1972,
mm.
and I remember watching the Olympic Games. And this is true. And Norman May was a commentator for the Olympic Games.
Loved him.
And it was in Germany, and the teams come out in alphabetical order, and Sri Lanka, he said, when it got to sea, he said, Ceylon should be here, but I noticed they're called Sri Lanka now. That must be the local name that they call Ceylon, not the English name. So I
correct.
He
was absolutely right.
Was it?
It was always, in Sinhalese, it yep. was known as Sri Lanka,
yep.
but we were anglicised, I guess, yep. you know, Anglo, mm-hmm. we called it Ceylon,
mm-hmm.
but also we had a Ceylon passport because of the British descent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we were, you know, I'm Ceylonese, I'm, yeah. you know, people mm-hmm. say to me, but I've just come back and...
when did it change? When did the name 72. Change?
In
72.
Yeah. Yeah, so because of the change of government and everything, yep. and yep. even the language, you had to study mm-hmm. in Sinhala.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been too hard.
And, of course, tea is the great export of Ceylon.
Yes.
It's not called Sri Lankan tea now. It doesn't have the same ring, does it?
It's still Ceylon tea. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Beverly, you're a star, and it's fantastic to have you here and be so open and frank and just casual about what you've achieved. So we really appreciate you coming in to You Cannot Be Serious, and all the best with your next endeavours.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.